Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are Canada's video game radio show, and we are here on 92.9 KICK FM Winnipeg's indie station. I am Mike the Legend, here with you again for another day, another perhaps Friday, perhaps it's Thursday, perhaps it's any other day. Doesn't really matter, but hopefully, if you're hearing us on First Run, this is Friday, April 27th of the year, 2012. How you doing out there, citizens of Winnipeg, who are listening to us on 92.9 KICK FM, or citizens of the global community who are listening to us on our website, thearcadeshow.com?
Yes, me being the second radio voice on this program.
Who just chimed in there?
I am this week. I'm Dennis, who is too good for a nickname.
Really?
This week.
Oh,
yeah, just this week.
Well, at least you qualified.
Yes, I mean,
I did. I was afraid for a moment that you would have ascended to a higher level of
nicknamedom.
Yes,
but not this week. Too good for it. Couldn't really be bothered, to be perfectly honest.
It's like, you know what? This nickname thing is beneath me this week.
Yes.
That's clearly what I'm getting from.
Yes, it was either that or hit the random button a bunch of times on Wikipedia again, and there's only so many times I can do that to you people without feeling really, really bad.
That's true. Then you might have to have a talk with the big boss and might lose a paycheck one week for that. Might be sanctioned.
Yes. Might have my license revoked.
Ooh.
Might be bussed down to sergeant and so fast it'll make my hat spin.
To think you're always just a few days away from retirement when that happens. Just yes. Always perpetually a few days away from retirement.
Yes.
A damn crying shame. But at least, I mean, at least you told us that you're too good for a nickname this week. I mean, otherwise we would have been left wondering what's going on.
Now, next week, who knows what next week will bring. I mean, I might be even better next week, so I might be way too good for a nickname. Who knows? Or I might just be good enough for a nickname. We'll have to see.
Just the right amount of Dennis to warrant a nickname.
Yes.
So, you know what? It's been an okay week. Yeah, I'll go with a nickname.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that this week, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, going to have to go ahead and just take that stapler back from you there. Yeah, thanks.
But it's my stapler. I need my stapler.
No? Yes? All right. Well, fine, be that way. But, all right, well, we've clearly run that into the ground.
Indeed.
Apparently, your nickname, Snobbery, has created quite the vacuum at the very start of this program.
Yes, normally it's a launching pad for some sort of thing to talk about, but I'm drawing a blank.
Well, I can offer this. I have to say that if interested parties are out there, they should be informed that apparently this fall, according to the press release that we received from our friends from Tommy Tallarico and Video Games Live, apparently
indeed,
they're coming back this fall
to Winnipeg.
To Winnipeg for a concert at the Centennial Concert Hall once again. I believe they're making it an annual trek here. an annual thing. Apparently Tommy Tallarico lives on the road.
Yes, and anytime you talk to him, he's guaranteed to bring up two things: Color a Dinosaur and the fact that Steven Tyler of Aerosmith is his cousin. Guaranteed. You ever meet him? That you'll talk about one of those two things or both of those two things. I know from personal experience.
As do I, having had the chance to speak with him. And I'm sure, you know what, if we were to phone him up right now, having his number on my phone in my contact list, which I can say in a very non-braggadocious manner, it's just a statement of fact, people. I can call Tommy Tallarico right now.
Yes, provided that he hasn't changed his cell phone plan or anything in the last 2-3 years, but yes.
Silence. Do not dash my dreams of one day just phoning up Tommy Tallarico and asking him if his fridge is running, and then informing him he should proceed to catch it.
Yes. Now, if you would like an audio recording of this particular phone call, please let us know, because Mike the Legend is just waiting for a reason. He's waiting for a reason to do this.
I'm there, people. I'm there. Just gotta give me a reason, man.
And we will air it on our radio program.
Indeed. So
the
you
Arcade.
Can make, oh, that's what we're called.
Yes.
Excellent.
I'm just driving that home, because it can't be said enough.
True.
On the Arcade.
On the Arcade.
Canada's video game radio show.
Indeed, and people can make that request through email, thearcade@kick.fm, or on our website, thearcadeshow.com. Haha.
Yes. Well, you cut out for that one.
Sure did. Thought I'd let you, since you're so good, I'd let you go it alone for that moment.
Indeed.
But yes, Video Games Live coming back this fall. Tickets are on sale as of Friday, April 27th. So plenty of time, a good 6-7 month span to get your tickets. Always a good turnout for those events, and they do make it into a big festival, a big to-do if you've never been to one. It is entertaining. Have to say that, and it's just a very unique experience, and you can tell that the people behind it, Tommy Tallarico and the symphony orchestra players that he has on stage, very talented in what they're doing, and it's a good evening. Good evening.
Indeed.
And if they're coming back, maybe we shall see if enough time has passed that we can speak to one Mr. Tommy Tallarico again and see if he does continually bring up Color of Dinosaur and his cousin being Steven Tyler.
Yes, because I guarantee he won't have remembered talking to us.
Not a hope in hell. But that is off in the far and distant future. And before we can ever get to that point in time, we have to deal with the here and now, deal with the present. Which, of course, the present matter at hand is the fact that we have to get through the ludicrous leadoffs.
Indeed, those two new stories that are cut above the rest. Grade A, as I used to say, which I think I'm going to bring back, because using a steak analogy, it's not a bad analogy to use, I think.
Steak is delicious.
Yes.
And it's radio deliciousness.
Yes. So, this week, there is a video game related ludicrous leadoff.
Believe it or not.
A very large scale video game related ludicrous leadoff.
It's quite the thing that has been done with this interpretation of a video game and implementation of a video game. It's not uncommon that video games will take on a supersized form factor, if you will. I think it was last summer we spoke of the people in Europe that created the world's largest working NES controller.
Yes, and even back in 2000, CNET reported that students of Brown University accomplished a video game feat. I believe it was Tetris, actually, playing Tetris on a Linux computer and 10,000 light bulbs on the side of some building somewhere.
Indeed.
But
this one just kind of takes it to the next level.
Yeah, it was described by the MIT Gallery of Hacks group as the Holy Grail of Hacks. It was wherein several MIT students hacked the Department of Earth, Atmospheric, and Planetary Science building on MIT's campus in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to do, to play a giant game of Tetris.
What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Apparently, this is a recent occurrence, and it happened last week, last Friday night, apparently, is when this hack, this prank, this whatever you wish to refer to it as, came to fruition. And it's very bizarre looking, but it's still, in fact, Tetris, in which they manipulated the building, the side of the building, and its windows to act like a Tetris grid and playing field.
Yes.
With pieces falling from the top of the building.
Yes, they're using some sort of console computer on the ground, wherein people could actually walk up and play it. But it was controlling lights in various rooms on the side of the building, which is pretty large. And yeah.
And all your standard Tetris pieces were there, with people playing it, falling from the top, and according to some parts of the video that I did see, still, as with any old game of Tetris that you play on any console, on any system, any device, you just don't get that straight line when you need it.
No, the long block is very elusive, no matter what iteration of Tetris you're playing.
And the funniest thing is, apparently, from the stories that are going around, these MIT students, these hackers, pranksters, jokesters, whatever you wish to call them, they're the ones who programmed their own version of Tetris for this application.
Well, if they wanted it to be super legit, they would have used all the original algorithms found within the game, I'd think. So it only makes sense that you would only get your long block every so often.
It's certainly true, and clearly wanting that authentic experience and trying not to cater it and make themselves look all smug and what have you, that they're that awesome that
yeah,
it's just there when they need it. But that's quite the prank. Now MIT, if you're aware at all, a school, very prestigious school in the United States of America, and certainly known, or its different faculties are known, for pranking the other faculties.
Yes.
And it becomes just an annual tradition to see who can outdo the next one, or who can outdo one from a previous year, to the point that I believe, from what I've read, they've taken classrooms and stuck everything in the classroom to the ceiling.
Yes.
Which would certainly be a trip walking in on, say, Monday morning.
Yes, where you're not sure if you're still asleep, especially if you're the professor walking into the classroom to give a lecture and realize that your lectern is on the ceiling, or are you on the ceiling?
Or even going so far as to hoist a, I believe, a professor's car from a different faculty onto the top of a building that apparently was going pretty far at that point.
Yeah.
I believe that was the engineering department that did that.
More than likely, I'd be a little bit mad if that was my car. Not gonna lie. I'd want someone's blood, probably. But that's just me. I would not be a very nice professor in that case.
Now, this faculty, this prank, clearly going for the nicer bent, the softer, kinder, gentler prank, but still entertaining all the same. And anytime you can get a supersized edition of a video game and a gaming experience, it's always worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, if anything else, just the public spectacle of it is just great to be a part of.
And you know that if you were part of that the team that did that, you have so much nerd cred on campus now too.
Oh yeah, of course.
You'd be bragging about it everywhere you go.
Yep.
You shouldn't have to pay for a drink after that for a while.
Yeah. It's like, remember when I did that big Tetris game? Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the 10 shots.
All right. Oh, God, I have a finals right in the morning. Uh-oh.
Well, 5 shots.
Got to keep it responsible.
Yes.
So that is that, and good on. A tip of the hat to all the people involved at MIT, and a tip of my hat now to the researchers, the fine researchers in Scotland, out of Dundee University in Scotland, for they have they've taken the next step and brought a piece of science fiction and turned it into reality. Now, this is not any sort of entirely futuristic science fiction. We're not talking about Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, anything of that sort. Not even Blade Runner. Anything of that sort. No, this is a different kind, or different vein of sci-fi and fantasy that has been brought into reality. It's something from the world of Doctor Who.
Yes, the world of Doctor Who, wherein, while it was science fiction, there was also sort of a magical element to it.
There always has been with the good Doctor. Always seems to be able to wiggle his way out of situations at hand. Now, as a series that's been going on for nigh on 50 years, he's been in a great many pickles.
Yes, and but he has a couple of trusty tools. I mean, there's the TARDIS, which I believe they're already currently trying to work on.
I'm sure there are a few different research facilities that are trying to work on that, and my God, I hope they are successful.
But
if you're not familiar with the TARDIS, just Doctor Who, Wikipedia, TARDIS.
Yeah, there's a big article. You'll read it, and you'll get down the Wikipedia path, and it'll be 2 in the morning, and then you realize you have to get up at 7 in the morning. Oh, whoops, it's happened more than once.
Exactly.
I can relate, but
and amongst his other tools, including his psychic badge, which can project anything he wants onto it, or his ability for telepathy and what have you, he's got another more trusty tool, his Swiss Army knife,
yes,
if you will. What he likes to call the sonic screwdriver.
Indeed.
Now, if you're not familiar with the sonic screwdriver, it looks like just a long pen part screwdriver.
It almost looks like a toothbrush.
Yeah, almost looks like an electric toothbrush. No, yeah. All right, that is the best way of saying it.
Yes, like the sonic spin brush. I don't know, I just saw a commercial the other day and I thought, huh, that sort of looks like a sonic screwdriver. Huh, interesting.
Now, the sonic spin brush doesn't have the same fancy whirling noise, though.
No.
Nor does it emit awesome color to know that it's actually working.
Yes, nor does it actually emit well, what the researchers at Dundee University say that the sonic screwdriver should emit.
Indeed, and that is ultrasonic waves, ultrasound waves, which in the world of Doctor Who is able to, well, be used for anything and everything. It's in the new iteration, it's part tricorder, part lockpick, part device that allows him to hack into a computer system, destroy streetlights, pretty well anything he wants. It can't shoot at anything. It's not a gun. It's just tricorder. But the big thing is that it can turn objects. Pick locks on doors, unless they're made of wood. But that's an entirely different Doctor Who story for an entirely different Doctor Who day. But again, the sonic screwdriver itself, yes, it can turn objects simply by emitting ultrasonic waves. And this is the aspect that the researchers at Dundee University have brought to fruition. Through their research, they are able to replicate that aspect of the screwdriver's functionality and have devised a machine that is capable of lifting and turning suspended objects just by using these ultrasound waves, which hasn't been possible previously.
Yes.
So this is quite cool. Now, the device that they have and what they've come up with is currently able to raise and turn discs that are suspended in a water-filled tube. And now, granted, I mean, that's not as cool as, well, everything that the sonic screwdriver itself can do, but it does mark the first time that scientists have been able to have an ultrasound device that will both move and rotate objects, previously only being able to move them up and down. And so the Dundee device itself is designed so that the momentum generated forms either a pushing beam or a rotating helix, as I make myself sound smarter here, as I quote the piece from Andrew Tarantola of Gizmodo.com.
Yes, of course, you're probably thinking, that's great, but what practical use can this ever possibly have?
Fair question.
Well, there are a few. Believe it or not, one of the upshots of this is the potential to have to perform non-invasive ultrasound surgery, targeted drug delivery, and ultrasonic manipulation of cells, which are very big things and are normally invasive and don't have the best of outcomes all the time when you want to do them in a non-ultrasonic way.
Mm-hmm.
So
it could certainly advance the frontier of new medical science for quite a ways.
Yes.
And a quote here from Dr. Mike McDonald of the Institute for Medical Science and Technology at Dundee University explains, quote, "This experiment not only confirms a fundamental physics theory, but also demonstrates a new level of control over ultrasound beams, which can also be applied to non-invasive ultrasound surgery, targeted drug delivery, and ultrasonic manipulation of cells," everything that you just said.
Yes.
But he's the doctor, so it's more authoritative.
Yes. Because he's a doctor.
Exactly. The goes on to say, quote, "The sonic screwdriver device is also part of the EU-funded nanoporation project, where we are already starting to push the boundaries of what ultrasound can do in terms of targeted drug delivery and targeted cellular surgery."
I love that they're just calling it the sonic screwdriver. Because, I mean, he's a doctor, but he's also probably a Doctor Who fan.
And he's Scottish, and a great many of the Doctors have been portrayed by Scottish actors. And
yes,
it's, well, Doctor Who is just big in the UK in general.
Yes.
But yes, you are right, that this isn't some fan term or some term that a writer or someone else has applied to it. They're taking that name themselves.
Yeah, they're saying, this is the sonic screwdriver, you know, like the one in Doctor Who. It's like, what? You're a legitimate academic. What are you calling it that for? Oh, because it's just like the one in Doctor Who.
Why are you getting so excited about this?
It'd be like them saying, this is a tricorder. Like, what? I've set my phaser to stun. Okay, now you're just being ridiculous.
Now you're just flying off the handle here. Calm down. But I'm always enthused when researchers, scientists, and academics in general are able to bring elements of that we see in sci-fi and fantasy into the realm of scientific reality. It always just embiggens us. It makes me feel, you know, that the stuff I enjoy, like Doctor Who, while nerdy, has actual practical and realistic elements to it.
Yes.
It's more grounded that way. Even though there are so many elements of Doctor Who that are not realistic, then, well...
And not grounded at all.
No, not even close. And certainly could go on a long-winded diatribe about Doctor Who and just extolling its many virtues, but I will not. I will save that for a different day and simply encourage all of you out there, Doctor Who, it's awesome. Watch it.
Indeed.
But thus concludes this portion of the ludicrous lead-offs, and now we're going to do something a bit different. We have a whole lot more show coming up for you later, but right now, we'll have it on the other side of this word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of sloppy, cut-rate funerals? You've tried the rest, now try the best. The Plots Are Us Mortuary Service. Remember, there's always plenty of free parking. And don't forget to visit our new salad bar.
Where's the spatula?
Okay, kids, let's go.
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City! A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost?
Spatula City!
Spatula City! And this weekend only, take advantage of our special liquidation sale. Buy 9 spatulas, get the 10th one for just 1 penny. Don't forget, they make great Christmas presents. And what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a spatula?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatula so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City, 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under Spatulas.
My, where did you get that lovely spatula?
Spatula City, we sell spatulas, and that's all.
Back now here on the arcade for another Friday night after our first of two now pre and contractually obligated sponsored segments. We'll have another one coming up later on, perhaps at some other unintrusive point.
Indeed.
But before we get there, we will start and get into some of the other harder news items of the week. And this one we're going to start with is an update to a story we had a few weeks ago that continued the trend we've seen throughout this year of Kickstarter being a viable way to get money for stuff.
Yes, I believe we were speaking about it last time.
Indeed, we were.
We were a little bit wary that it might not reach its goal, but those fears were squashed. Luckily.
Summarily squashed.
Yes. And many people are going to be happy to see that there will indeed be a new Leisure Suit Larry game on the horizon.
Indeed. Now, at the time, the Kickstarter campaign had been announced, and there were still about two and a half-ish weeks to reach their target of $500,000. But Al Lowe and company are proud to report that as of a few days ago, with about 6 days to go in their campaign, they did reach and move past the $500,000 target, meaning that, yes, they will move forward with their plans for the redo of the first Leisure Suit Larry game.
Yes, Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards, which, if you've never played it, it is one of those classic old Sierra titles, the adult version of The King's Quest and or Mixed Up Mother Goose or Space Quest or Police Quest or any of those, but all those games with the same engine, but with more offensive adult themes.
Certainly more adult, and certainly this, if it is rated, it's M for mature, but that's all right. And now with the development of it going forward, it's going to come out on the PC, Mac, iPad, and Android tablet platforms. And now that the campaign itself has surpassed their $500,000 goal, they plan on putting the extra money into trying to bring the game to Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, and Linux.
Which is a strange addition to make, but...
It certainly is.
You don't often see love for the open source with these sort of projects, but there you are.
I guess they want to bring love to any and all people of the land, as is the case with Al Lowe and Replay Games here. Now, with a few days to go, they've surpassed their total, but they still have, four or five days left in their campaign. Now, at the time of recording this show, they were around 525,000 dollars, I believe.
Yeah, give or take a couple of grand. That was about right, yeah.
Indeed. Within the ballpark, well within the ballpark. And money being reached, Replay Games does plan to translate the Leisure Suit Larry remake into additional languages and create an orchestral soundtrack and add on to the game itself. An orchestral soundtrack.
Yes, because that's exactly what Leisure Suit Larry needs. An orchestral soundtrack.
I've often found myself playing the old iterations of Leisure Suit Larry thinking, you know, this soundtrack just isn't rich enough.
Of course not, because it came out of the original little PC speaker that was built onto your motherboard. Does anyone remember that? I hope we're not in a total different age range than our listening group here, our demographic.
Where we're just dating ourselves terribly?
Yes.
Entirely possible. I mean, granted, we speak of Leisure Suit Larry. It is a franchise and a character that has fallen by the wayside in recent years. I mean,
yes,
he did go on and spawn a great many sequels the character did have, but again, in recent years, not as popular.
Yes, and this game actually is a remake of a game that came out about 25 years ago, so...
But it's being redone in much glossier graphics.
I would hope so.
So there is that, and apparently full voice work will be done for the game. Additional jokes, according to Al Lowe, will be added into it as well. And it will feature a more modern point-and-click interface.
Yes, so probably taking cues from games that came out in upwards of 6 or 7 years after the original Leisure Suit Larry came out.
You know, that does sound very ridiculous to say.
Think of Myst. I still think of Myst as a relatively modern point and click, and it's about 20 years old as well. Am I really...
Apparently,
I guess I am that old.
I guess when you can just remember Myst 1 so easily, yeah. Welcome to your side of the generational divide. In the world.
That's unfortunate for me.
Well, it's all downhill from here now, just to warn you.
Yes, I'm aware of this.
Okay.
But
something to look forward to. Leave this fall is when they are targeting release for the launch of the new Leisure Suit Larry game. So
yes. Now, to keep myself a little bit more modern here, I think a tablet version of this game would probably be the best version of this game. Just putting that out there. Finally, a use for tablets. Smutty video games.
Smutty point-and-click video games.
Yes.
This is truly what Steve Jobs envisioned when he envisioned the iPad.
Yes.
And if that's not what he was envisioning, I don't know what to use an iPad for then.
I don't want to know what he was envisioning.
Ooh.
Yeah, anyways.
Good point. But
we won't go any further down that path for fear of really making anyone who is listening to us that much angrier.
Which we could, yes, quite easily, but we won't. Instead, we'll move right along to another news item that we came along. Apparently, this is the season, or the past few weeks at least, have been the season of new video game announcements. And
yes,
this season, or this latest one, a fairly big title, though on a not as big platform as some of the other ones, such as Assassin's Creed, Resident Evil 6, you know, the other larger AAA titles, as have been announced for the fall. This one, not announced for the fall, instead slated tentatively for a summer release date from a little company called Nintendo. And this one is another entry in the, well, it's another Mario game, I guess, in his new Super Mario Brothers series. This one, a numbered sequel, called New Super Mario Brothers 2, exclusively on the 3DS.
Yes, now this is, of course, going to be featuring iconic characters from the Mushroom Kingdom, as we all know by now. If you don't know any of these characters, you've probably been living under a rock for the past 30 years.
And we feel sorry for you.
Yes, of course. Princess Peach, Bowser, Mario, Luigi, Toad. And, you know, things are going to be making a comeback, like the Tanuki suit.
Indeed, the Tanuki suit and the leaf. Yes. The power leaf.
I hope not the frog suit, though. I was never a fan of the frog suit.
It had limited use.
If they had more water levels in that game, I could see it. But no, you pretty much sucked as soon as you got onto the land.
It was a nice idea. It was a neat idea. Given that. Yeah, no. But doesn't matter because really the standout item of Super Mario Bros. 3 wasn't the frog suit, was in fact the power leaf, which enables you to, well, don raccoon ears and a tail, and for some reason fly.
I was more fan of the Tanuki suit, personally, because it had all the powers of the power leaf, but you could also turn into a statue.
True enough.
I also was a fan of the Hammer Brothers suit, but that's also another, a whole other discussion here, items that you liked from old Mario Brothers games, specifically Mario Brothers 3, which items were the best, and that's a whole segment unto itself, which I don't believe we have time to get to today.
Well, I think part of what perhaps for some people makes the Leaf such a strong impression on them is that it was, well, the item that you get before the all the rest, before you get the frog suit, and you could fly.
That's true.
It was the first one that made Mario fly, and then reach higher levels, which was just amazing, as we saw so eloquently shown in the hit movie, The Wizard.
Yes, of course, if you've never seen The Wizard, you're truly missing out, and if you saw The Wizard back in the day, you were privy to one of the earliest public video game tips.
Yeah.
Because it showed the location of the first warp whistle.
Sure
which
did.
I don't think anyone would have had, you know, thought to look for if it wasn't for that movie.
You almost have to wonder if it was deliberately done knowing that the game was going to be shown in the movie.
Yeah, that movie was it was a big commercial for a bunch of video games is all it was.
Sure was.
It was a terrible movie otherwise. I watched it recently, I know. Trust me on this one. But
No arguments here. I fully understand. But yes, the Power Leaf is making a comeback, and not only is the fact that it will make Mario don the raccoon ears and tail once again important, but also of note is that in the four screenshots that have been released of the game thus far, the one of them displaying Mario with the leaf and the ears and tail shows the P meter, the power meter, in the bottom left corner, which allows you again, just like Mario 3, to charge up by running and then launch into the air for a brief period of time, which is awesome.
Yes,
which
I agree.
I'm sorry, the nostalgic part of me just cannot contain himself.
Yes, that also leads you to believe that there will also be a P-Wing.
You would hope.
Which was pretty much the best item in Mario 3, now that I think about it. I mean,
that was a good one.
Infinite P meter.
That was really handy trying to get through World 8.
Yes, until you ran totally out of those P wings and had to actually rely on either skill or luck to get through those crazy fast flying airships.
Skill, luck, or if you were fortunate enough, an older sibling. I was not fortunate enough.
Yeah, I was the older sibling, unfortunately, so.
So there is that. So it's certainly continuing on the aesthetic of the new Super Mario Brothers game, as what we saw with the first one, which, as with many other Mario games, the later levels are just, wow, those hurt. Very challenging, but yes. Some more items to be had, at least in this one. And while they were announcing the new Super Mario Brothers game on 3DS, Nintendo also took the opportunity to announce, on their own volition, there was no suspicion or rumors or anything, just that later on this year for the Wii, there's going to be a 20th anniversary collection for Kirby coming out.
Which is awesome, I think.
Appropriately titled, Kirby Anniversary Collection.
Yes. They claim that this game would contain a variety of previously released fan favorite Kirby titles, without going into specifics. But obviously, they have to have Kirby's Adventure, Kirby's Dream Land,
mm-hmm.
and at least one or two of the ones for Super Nintendo, I'd think.
Probably, yeah. I don't even know where you would start, stop, or what your criteria would be. Or you could cram them all in there, presumably.
Presumably, yes, with the exception of Kirby's Epic Yarn, which was in and of itself a Wii game, and I'm not sure how that would have would have worked for another Wii game, but yes.
I wholly support this idea. I mean, Kirby being one of those games and characters, again, from the youth that was a staple, a tremendous part. And hard to believe Kirby is now 20 years old.
Yes.
And, oh, God, it hurts to be old again. But this leads me to a point that came to my mind when coming across the news item. It seems Nintendo is very selective about how they enforce their anniversaries of characters, of pillars of their gaming systems or
yeah.
characters. They did a big thing for Mario's 25th with the different colored DS systems, different colored Wii system, and also the launch of the Super Mario All-Stars game on the Wii itself with special soundtracks and whatever else. Zelda, they did some stuff for. The concert series releasing a Zelda game as a DS download, stuff like that, but no specific anniversary game collection, which is really just a staple and seemingly one of the best ways to commemorate a character in your stable. However, Metroid as a franchise got no love.
Yeah, zero love.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah, despite the fact that Metroid has had, I dare say, just as many successful games as the Zelda series.
I think that's certainly a fair point to make, and released the same year as the first Legend of Zelda game, and yet nothing, not even a mention.
Yes.
Not even anything on DS or anything.
And it's a little bit strange that they're really jumping the gun with this Kirby Anniversary Collection after only 20 years, and I don't think as many games as Zelda or Metroid.
If you start to include games on the DS and maybe the handheld systems, you'll reach a similar total. But on console, not as much.
Well, to be fair, though, Metroid had its fair share of DS and handheld games as well.
Oh, that is true, too. However, I also find it weird that they're releasing it on the Wii. Now, don't they have a new system coming out?
Yeah.
Now, Grant, I mean, yes, there will be backwards compatibility between the two. However, why not just put it on the Wii U?
Yeah.
As a launch title.
It's a very fair question, but, I guess they don't care that much.
I don't know. Just strikes me entirely as being odd, but then again, what do I know?
Maybe they're waiting for the 30th for Metroid.
Hopefully.
For the Wii U. For a big, crazy HD remake, because that, of course, is supposed to be one of the nice things about the Wii U, how it's actually going to be in HD, as opposed to the Wii, which was not, sadly.
That would be quite the thing. Who knows? Only time will tell, but remains to be seen. But before we get to the 30th anniversary edition of anything, again, August, summer, sometime is when you'll get the new Super Mario Brothers on the 3DS game. And this fall, for the 20th Anniversary Edition Kirby Collection, or Kirby Anniversary Collection, if you wish to be proper about it. I don't. But we'll move along to a game that was announced a few weeks ago that we haven't had a chance to get to yet, but we will get to now, because certainly possible that you might have missed it, might not have heard about it in the course of your daily affairs. It's continuing on with a trend we've seen lately, especially in, when it comes to Capcom, in terms of cross-company
pollination.
Games. Yeah, cross-company pollination of games. It's, as we've seen with, say, Smash Brothers, you'll have characters from different franchises appear, and also with the recently released Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Yes.
Different worlds colliding in there. And now, this isn't just a game involving two companies whose worlds are colliding. Nay, nay, it goes one step further and has three companies' worlds collide in one single game on the 3DS?
Yeah, it's a strange one, that's for sure. Whereas Street Fighter Cross Tekken and Tekken Cross Street Fighter both involved, Capcom and I believe it was
Namco.
This new project, I believe it's supposed to be said Project Cross Zone, but I read it as Project X Zone because Final Fantasy VI has trained my brain that way.
And also, to me, Project X Zone just sounds cooler.
Yes. Now, this is a marriage between Capcom, Namco Bandai, and Sega, of all companies.
Huh.
Wherein a bunch of characters from each of the company's respective stables all get together in a big strategy RPG shindig for the 3DS.
Yes. So let's just run this through again. Capcom, Sega, Namco Bandai, getting together for a game on the 3DS. It's a strategy RPG. Yes, it's okay if you're scratching your head and emitting very curious noises.
Yes.
We did as well.
Yes, and the video is no help. the trailer video, it's entirely in Japanese, and it's very Japanese. I'd say it was very Japanese if all of the language was English, regardless, because it's very Japanese, just in style and in how everything is presented.
Now, it's entirely possible that they only intend for this game to be released in Japan, because a lot of the characters taken are from, RPGs and other games that are predominantly popular in Japan.
Having said that, though, there is a fair share of characters that we are familiar with over here. I mean, from Capcom's side alone, there's Ryu and Ken, and Chris and Jill from Resident Evil, and interestingly enough, X and Zero from the Mega Man X series.
Which is just strange.
Yeah, to see the Resident Evil characters with the Mega Man characters with Street Fighter characters all together in and of itself is bizarre.
And the same game is just, it's a noodle scratcher.
But then when you mix in people from, Virtua Fighter, like Pai and Akira from Virtua Fighter, including, and then Ulala and Tuma from Space Channel 5, another one that some people might be familiar with.
Indeed, as well as Jin and Xiaoyu, a name I'm probably butchering from the Tekken franchise as well. It just becomes a giant mishmash that you don't know what form it's going to take.
Yeah.
Again, a strategy RPG, but from the trailer that's available, again, just go onto YouTube, search up Project X Zone, and you'll be able to find it. It's of no help because the only real gameplay that you see is involving, 2-on-1 combat. With company-branded characters fighting alongside their logical tag-team partner.
Yes, so you get Jill and Chris together.
Yes.
But you don't see Jill with Mega Man or Chris with Ken and Ryu or anything like that.
Or you don't get Dante from Darkstalkers or even Ryu with Jin fighting alongside each other. It's company specific, and in the available video, they're tag teaming on a single enemy. I don't know if it's a boss fight. I don't know if that's the combat system. Don't know anything. Anything other than it looks very Japanese.
Yes, and there is a good sign that this is not going to be released out of Japan in the fact that Namco and Capcom did get together once before to attempt to put an RPG together. And it was released on the PS2, which, and this was, of course, titled Namco X Capcom, or Namco Cross Capcom, came out in 2005, like I said, and it received average reviews in Japan, but was still apparently the top-selling title during its week of release at just shy of 88,000 units, but it was never released outside of Japan. Which is totally unsurprising to me, if the trailer that we saw for this game was anything like that previous game, so
I don't know what to make of this, or if this is a trend that will, I guess, make its way across the ocean. into North American companies, as they will want to maybe start cross-pollinating their games with other games, and the end result, I don't know. Maybe we get... Oh, let me just go absolutely wild and crazy. Master Chief in the Half-Life universe.
Well, there have been stranger things happening recently, actually. If anyone out there recalled or followed the feeds like us, I don't know if we talked about it on the program, but there was actually an official mod to Skyrim released where Valve got their hands on the Skyrim engine and put a space core
into
the world of Skyrim with comedic results. So that was an interesting thing. So anything really is possible, I think.
I suppose this seems to be an era of greater partnership and of companies coming together and saying, yes, let's finally do this. Let's finally do the thing that, you know, fans have joked about and wanted and spoken of for years. Well, all right.
Yeah, I mean, we're not living in, you know, the cutthroat early 90s when there was two titanic companies basically having a stranglehold on everything, and there was basically no room for any other competition. In classic console war days, that is, between Sega and Nintendo, who are no longer the giants of the industry, unfortunately.
Well, it's certainly decentralized from what it was, and if there is any further information on this very bizarre and eclectic title...
Yes, or any other titles that may further this trend, of course...
That would be of interest. We will certainly bring it to you here on the Arcade because, well, we are Canada's video game radio show, a point we like to stress every so often. Or if you come across any other collaborations between companies, game companies, and you want us to talk about it, or you just want to make us aware, shoot us a line, thearcade@kick.fm, or on our website, thearcadeshow.com.
But stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. There will be more Arcade for you after this brief commercial break.
Never before in the history of motion pictures has there been a screen presence so commanding, so powerful, so deadly. He's Conan the Librarian.
Can you tell me where I can find a book on astronomy?
Don't you know the Dewey Decimal System?
Conan the Librarian.
I'm sorry, these books are a little overdue.
Conan the Librarian.
Tonight, only on U62.
Next week on U62.
He's back. And this time, he's mad. Gandhi 2. No more Mr. Passive Resistance. He's out to kick some butt. This is one bad mother you don't want to mess with.
Don't move, slime body.
He's a one-man wrecking crew. But he also knows how to party.
Give me a steak, medium rare.
Hey, Baldy!
There is only one law. His law. Gandhi 2.
Back here on the Arcade, as we turn now to Movie Corner.
Indeed.
It's a little segment that we like to pull out when it's convenient for us, and this week it's convenient for us.
Yes, we have a couple of movies to talk about now that are coming out soon and are relevant to our interests and are probably relevant to your interests too as listeners to this radio program.
And are certainly relevant to the world of video games. And we will start with this one. A couple years ago, you might have seen that the movie Silent Hill got the movie treatment.
Yes.
Or the game Silent Hill got the movie treatment, excuse me.
6 years ago, actually. Now.
That's a long time.
I remember seeing it in the theater, and I didn't think it was that good.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, spectacular, and it captured the mood of the series, but it didn't really capture any specific things about, well, the first game anyways.
But hopefully this next iteration of Silent Hill movies will, because it's getting a sequel that has been announced and will hit theaters this Halloween, more specifically on October 26th. And it sounds like it's going to be called Silent Hill Revelation 3D. And from the press release, it might be more true to the video game universe.
Yes, it will star Adelaide Clemens, who we saw in X-Men Origins, and the ever lovable Mr. Sean Bean, who is thankfully not playing the same role again like he has been for the last little bit. You know, the downtrodden medieval king who eventually, well, usually or probably meets a bad end.
Generally, yes, I mean, but not in this one, though, not in this this role.
No, yeah, him and Adelaide Clemens are both playing Heather and Harry Mason, who are a father and daughter on the run for mysterious reasons, despite the fact that in the original game, his daughter's name was Cheryl. I distinctly remember this, but it wasn't, but whatever.
You're splitting hairs at this point.
I'm splitting hairs at this point. He's still Harry Mason.
Because the other interesting fact about this movie is not the fact that, well, I mean, interesting alone in the fact that Sean Bean is in it playing Harry Mason, which is hilarious.
Yes.
But the supporting cast is just as hilarious.
Yes. Again, I believe we mentioned last week or a couple of weeks ago that Malcolm McDowell seems to do anything for money. And
so long as the check clears.
Yes, and he will be in this game movie as well.
Yes.
As will Kit Harington, also of Game of Thrones, and Carrie Ann Moss, who you might recently remember from the Mass Effect series, or not so recently remember from The Matrix as Trinity.
Indeed. So certainly interesting. Seems a stronger cast than what they had for the first movie.
Yes, but odd that Sean Bean is playing Harry Mason in this movie, as he was apparently in the 2006 iteration of Silent Hill, but not as Harry Mason, but as Christopher De Silva. But I don't remember him whatsoever in there.
Nor do I, so it'll be refreshing to see him in a more prominent role.
Yes.
And the fact that it's Sean Bean,
who yes.
is a good genre actor.
Yes, despite the fact that he usually, in the last few years anyway, has basically played Boromir over and over again. You know, with his beard and unkempt medieval hair and holding a sword of some sort.
And some sort of, you know, very hard lifestyle that's led him to that point in time when we meet him as a character in the story.
Yes.
But we'll see how it turns out on October 26th when Silent Hill Revelation 3D hits theaters.
Indeed.
And we'll move along to another video game movie-related news item here. It's a movie that we haven't really talked about because we didn't really know much about until just recently. Apparently, Disney is coming out with a non-Pixar animated movie this fall in November that will be very much themed and centered around the world of video games.
Yes. Now, it almost seems like the modern video game equivalent to Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
A little bit.
Like the Bob Hoskins outfit from the 80s, if you've never seen it, it still holds up as a classic piece of cinema. I mean, where the cartoon world spills into the real world, this is where the video game world spills into other video game worlds,
certainly
from what I understand.
It certainly does. It centers around a character named Wreck-It Ralph, the title character for the movie as well. Essentially a giant guy who, well, destroys buildings in a Rampage-style game, gets tired of being the bad guy, and goes off and wants to be the hero, and trots through many different video game archetypes, scenes, and settings that apparently will pay homage to games like Halo and Mario Kart and whatever else. And the interesting thing we've learned about this movie is not that it's coming out or that it's being released or anything like that, but is the fact that it apparently will include cameo appearances from other video game characters, contemporary video game characters, such as, say, apparently Bowser will be in the game, as well as some of the ghosts from Pac-Man.
And more ridiculously, I'd say, according to some reports we've seen, Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog, no, not Dr. Eggman, but Robotnik.
Going back old school.
Yes. Kano from Mortal Kombat, and Coily the Snake from Q-Bert.
So that's quite the eclectic cast, and we can only imagine that there will be even more characters from video games popping up. But what really makes this, movie, at least on the surface, seem all the more interesting to people like us who enjoy animated movies and video games is its director.
Yes, because we're also people who enjoy old Simpsons and Futurama. And the director is Rich Moore, who you may know from directing certain classic Simpsons episodes, such as Cape Fear, you know, the one, the Witness Relocation Program episode where Bart was trying to get away from Sideshow Bob.
Yes.
Or Marge versus the Monorail, which Conan O'Brien wrote.
Another classic episode.
Super classic episode. And on the Futurama side of things, the Emmy award-winning episode, Roswell That Ends Well. The little jaunt down time travel lane where causality gets kind of ruined near the end, but I won't spoil it because anyone who's a fan of science fiction and cartoons should watch that and go, oh, come on.
Contains one of the best lines in all of Futurama lore when the professor utters, screw you, causality.
Yes. No. Yeah, so
November 2nd is when the movie comes out. There's no official teaser trailer out for it yet. Apparently that will be coming in the next few weeks. Very likely will be placed in front of the Pixar movie Brave, which comes out in the month of June. So when it comes out, we will certainly make you aware of it. But on the surface, at least, the info is indicating it could be worth watching. Certainly interesting from the outset.
I agree.
So that will be something we keep our eye on, and it's something contemporary, but it's not something that's old or from the past.
That's correct, because we have to talk about that now in The Blast from the Past.
As we are running out of time here, and we should get to it before we're out of time.
Yes, now, earlier on in the program, you heard us run what we were calling ads or commercials.
Indeed.
But you may have been smart enough to realize that they're not actual commercials.
No.
I hope. There is no Spatula City here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and nor is there a discount funeral home or anything like that.
And nor will you be able to watch Gandhi 2 on U62.
No.
Very unfortunate, though.
But they were all a clever tie-in to our Blast from the Past, which this week is the movie UHF. Yes, the Weird Al
vehicle from, to stardom.
Yeah, from 1989 that featured, before they went on to greater fame, both Michael Richards and
Fran Drescher.
So,
and one of the last screen appearances of Billy Barty.
Yes,
of vaudeville fame.
Yes, of vaudeville fame. Who's one of like the classic dwarf actors.
Certainly was. If you haven't heard of UHF, good merciful heavens, what's wrong with you? But now that you have, find it on DVD. It's worth watching. Here's the premise.
Or Blu-ray, perhaps, if it's out for Blu-ray. I'm not entirely sure.
Indeed. Or VHS, if you like that old feel of VHS.
Yes.
Needless to say, here's the story in a nutshell. Weird Al inherits a TV station and brings his own brand of original programming to it. Hilarity ensues, and it's funny as hell. It's at the time when it came out, didn't really do so well at the box office, and that experience kind of turned Weird Al off from ever doing a movie again.
Yes, which, well, I mean, it became a cult classic, which may have turned his head in more recent years after he realized that so many people love that movie so much.
Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of his brand of humor through his parodies and his original pieces of music, that really comes through in the movie where he was the writer of it as well, or a co-writer for it, at the very least. And it's stupid, but really funny as well.
Yes, in that classic airplane kind of sight gag way.
Very heavy on the, I guess, airplane influence, and it's well worth your time, and it's... I know we've had it before as a blast from the past, but it bears repeating every once in a while, just in case some people forget about it. Leaves your I guess, front of your mind. You should watch it, reacquaint yourself. Still holds up, at least I believe it does hold up, even to this day.
I believe so as well. I mean, there's still plenty of laughs to be had.
And it's certainly worthwhile to sit down, you get some friends together, you reminisce over UHF. It's a good time, had by all.
Indeed.
And that about wraps it up for this week, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. But we are here every Friday night at 7 p.m. We air again Sundays at 6 p.m. here on 92.9 KICK FM. It is Winnipeg's indie station. And if you missed it on the air on your terrestrial radio, you can always go to the interwebs and find it. Find this week's show, next week's show, last week's show, and every other week's show on our website, thearcadeshow.com. And as always, you can drop us a line through the power of email. thearcade@kick.fm is the address. So until next week, everybody, good night.
Good night.